Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
If you're feeling anxious about your investments with all the economic volatility and chaos in Washington, tune in to Super Talk Jackson on Wednesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. and Sundays from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. for Element Wealth Radio with Jeremy Nelson. Learn more at myelementwealth.com.
It's a great time to live in Mississippi, and we're talking about it. Welcome to the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. I appreciate you joining us here in coastal Mississippi as we speed toward Easter and the end of the Lenten season. And I tell you, it's been a good one for me, actually. I always, not that I always am not always focused on my health, because I am, but I doubled down during Lent. I started Lent, incidentally, with a 3-day fast and kind of went from there. But I was looking at the scale this morning, and I weigh the less than I have in probably 20 years right now. Hope I can stay on that. But you know how it works. You get it over, you get to Easter, and you get a little clumsy, and things kind of take care of themselves. But I hope you have a great weekend. And here we are on Friday with the weather here in coastal Mississippi, beautiful. And we've got my friend Jeff Duncan from NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. So what's fun, Jeff, about you joining me every Friday is that Kyle, you and I end up getting into all kinds of interesting conversations. It just happens. So we've become good friends. Not that you and I, we go back a long, long way, which is one of the reasons why you're on this show. We're good friends, and you've honored us with your presence here every Friday. But it's fun to kind of visit with Kyle, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, sometimes we have to go, let's start recording the show, or else we'll be talking all morning. We've got a lot of things in common, so it's always good to catch up every week. It's kind of like a little coffee, like we're having a little coffee get together before we start recording.
It is. Kyle, I enjoy visiting with you. One of the things that's interesting about our conversation this morning is just that you and I went through some major changes in the newspaper business. You understand the challenges that are facing us. You're in a unique position in New Orleans because you have a very well-to-do owner who is working really hard to serve that community. And, honestly, there are very few communities left in America that have someone like John George's, to be quite honest with you, that's willing to invest in the local market. And, I've watched all that play out. And, you're fortunate to be there, but you and I have watched major changes in the industry, and Colin and you and I were just chatting about the radio side of things, and it has been it's very dynamic in the media world, isn't it? I'm curious, when you're at a media day or you're covering sports and you have all these folks that are present from other media, does it come up? Is it just a general conversation you guys have about the state of the situation these days?
No, it really doesn't. I mean, it was a little more of that at the New Orleans Book Festival last week, because there was a lot of different media outlets represented there by authors. So there was a lot of in social settings, there was some discussion about it. But at these events, no, we don't hear as much.
Well, that's interesting. Anyway, it's good to catch up with you every morning. I was looking through your Twitter feed. I follow you very closely. You've been busy, man. You wrote a great column about Tulane's quarterback. You actually posted a video of him, and we'll talk a little bit about why you believe he might be a significant, could be a player in the NFL. You also just recently attended the LSU Pro Day. And man, by all accounts, that was, I think, 32 teams, at least the last report I saw, 32 teams attended. A lot of focus on Jaden Daniels, but not just Jaden Daniels, just in general. Have you been to a pro day that was like that before?
No, I think that was probably the most NFL representatives and media reps there. You got to remember that LSU, I think it was 2019, of course, when they won the national title and had Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. They had 5 first-round draft picks on that team, but that was during COVID, so the actual pro day that year, there wasn't attendance like that. Yeah. So this was by far the largest. I talked to Mike Bonnet, the sports information director at LSU. He said it was by far the most media reps they've ever credentialed. And of course, every team is there. This LSU is going to have projected 3 top 20 draft picks in Obviously, Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner, Malik Nabers, star wide receiver, and another receiver, Brian Thomas Jr. So, and then they have a host of other players that'll be in the middle rounds, second day picks. So, yeah, now it's not as much fun as it used to be, Ricky. I have to say, from my point of view, my perspective as journalist, in the day, and I say in the day, it was just 5 years ago, we were allowed to kind of be on the field as well. And so you could mingle around with the NFL decision makers. You could saddle up to Mickey Loomis or Dennis Allen or Jeff Ireland and kind of pick their brain while you're watching the workouts. Now we're cordoned off as usual. You know, the media is all off to the side behind velvet ropes. So there's just not as much to gather. There's not as much reason to be there. The event is televised. I could get as much out of the event by watching on TV as I did yesterday, except for afterward where you go and get a chance to interview the Brian Kelly and the LSU prospect. But there's no access to the NFL scouts, which is really why you're there.
Well, you know, it's funny that you said that because I'm looking at this picture, and of course, there are many pictures, obviously many pictures, but one is where Jaden Daniels is passing, just one of the ones that you posted, and you made a comment about Dan Quinn from the Commanders. Incidentally, they called you out for getting something wrong, and you had to. We'll talk about that in a second. But here's the thing, man. I was going to ask you. You know, this picture is from a distance, and I was curious about who took the picture because. In the picture, it's not clear that there are any media on the field, and I just didn't notice that was the case before. You're now pointing out to me that they're you're pushing you guys off to the side. But did you take this picture from the press box?
Yeah, we're like on a catwalk up above. That's one of the good things about the LSU indoor facilities. You can get up above. That's one of my longtime complaints about the Saints indoor facilities. They have no ability to watch practice. You're always on the field. And if you've ever been to an NFL game or any football game and stood on the field, it's very hard to see anything.
Yeah.
You can't really see routes develop. It's hard to see over the linemen. But at the difference was at the Tulane meet pro day the day before, it was originally scheduled to be held at Tulane's Uelmann Stadium. But we had some shaky weather that morning. There was some off and on rain forecast. So they moved it to the Saints indoor facility really on a whim that morning. And we were able to take advantage, Ricky, of the fact that it was kind of haphazard because everybody was just there on the field together, media, scouts. And so as a result, you know, I watched a lot of the activity with John Summerall, the new Tulane coach. I was able to pick his brain about how things are going. I could saddle up to Saints coaches some of them I hadn't met. There were the new offensive coaches and the staff were there. I was got a chance to get some FaceTime with them. It was much more productive from my perspective than going down to LSU and being cordoned off in a corner.
Well, look, and we'll get into the pro day. We'll get into Michael Pratt at Tulane. We'll cover a lot of those pieces, but it's an important point to make here. One of the things that makes a really good reporter in general, but especially an NFL reporter, if you're covering the Saints, one of the most important things that you're doing is developing relationships with these guys. You're not just interviewing them. You're developing relationships with them. I'll call, as an example, the book you wrote about Peyton and Breeze. You didn't just come into writing that book about Peyton and Breeze. You built trust between Breeze and Peyton over many, 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 many years that gave you the level of access that you ultimately got to be able to write a book like that. But so a lot of people, especially a columnist, you know, a lot of people don't fully appreciate the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to create this network. And man, that's critical to you being able to do your job the way you do it, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's like a lot of professions. It's a people business. It's all you stand or fall on the strength of your relationships and the trust and credibility you've earned. You have to earn that over time. And I speak to my sources almost on a daily basis, or at least every other day basis, when I don't even need anything. I'm just trying to see how their lives are going, see what's going on in their world, just maintaining a relationship. So it's not one-sided. I'm not extracting information. No one wants to be used. It's got to be a two-way street where they're gaining something out of the relationship as well as you are. And that takes time.
Yeah. I say the same thing about this show. I mean, I said many times that one thing about the gift that was given to me, the opportunity to start doing this show 4 years ago and the over 1,100 conversations that Kyle and I have been involved in, it's not just those conversations. I mean, those certainly those conversations, I'm building relationships with them. But like with you, the conversations that take place during the breaks, before the show, after the show, and through text when we're not even doing a show, is I can't tell you how important that is. That, you know, you in order for me, like, for example, I had the state auditor Shad White on recently. I had with it just in the past week, the Secretary of State Michael Watson, and a long list of people. They're not going to be on this show. They don't trust me. They're not going to have offline communication with me if they don't trust me. They do trust me. But it takes time to build credibility with your sources, and they got to know, because especially in the NFL, buddy, you know this better than any. Especially in the NFL, man, you burn a source, you'll never get them back again, will you?
No, and it's too competitive. There's too many people covering it right now, and you don't ever want to. It's hard to earn your reputation or credibility back once you destroy it.
Hey, when we come back on the other side, we're going to get in a little bit more detail about what's happening at Tulane, and especially the LSU Pro Day that was kind of a big headline. We'll see you after this with Jeff Duncan.
For Mississippi is why he's here. This is the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. We have my friend Jeff Duncan, the columnist, award-winning columnist for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. Hey, Jeff, real quick side note before we get back into the topics. I was at my grandson's baseball game yesterday, and my granddaughter, Riley, who's just such an amazingly sweet kid. She's 8 years old. She's just amazing. And she said she was going to go get some popcorn. And I said, you know, I'll go with you. And we're walking to the concession stand together. The particular field we were on was pretty far from the concession stand. So we're walking along, and she said, you know what? She calls me Papa. She said, you know what we did at school today, Papa? I said, no. She said, we had a dress like your favorite college team today. I said, really? That's interesting. Of course, we went to Southern Miss. My wife and I and most of our family did, but my son Justin went to Auburn. So that's the only SEC family in team in my family. And we all fell in love with Auburn. So we're big War Eagle fans, and we watch Auburn, and all the kids, you know, they love going to Auburn, and she's been to camps there. And I would be very surprised if she didn't end up going to Auburn. But she said, yeah, me and her brother, who was having a game, Brody, and then the other two kids, my son Jordan's kids, they all wore Auburn. She said, but you know what, Papa? I said, what? She said, you know what everybody else wore? I said, no. Ole Miss. And I thought she was going to say Mississippi State or LSU. That's what everybody else wore at the Ole Miss or LSU. LSU, buddy. Let me tell you straight up. LSU is popular here in coastal Mississippi. So, you know, a discussion about Pro Day or anything LSU, they're going to be very interested in. But isn't that interesting? There might have been a state or whatever, but she's 8 years old. She made her perception was she was the only Auburn, and everyone else was Ole Miss or LSU. That's what she told me. I just thought it was kind of funny as we walked along to go get popcorn.
Yeah, look, I think what Scott Woodward, the athletic director, has done at LSU, some of the hires, I mean, they've won a national championship in women's basketball, baseball. Obviously, the football program just had a Heisman Trophy winner. That program has blown up, and they're a very unique brand, right? I mean, the purple and gold is unique in college sports. So there's just a lot of things they've got going for. There's a very powerful brand in college athletics.
And one of the things I learned when I was in New Orleans, spending time with people who were responsible from the board of trustees at LSU, et cetera, is that, and you and I have chatted about this before, whereas in Mississippi, we have all these major colleges, so two SEC teams and so on. In New Orleans, you've got subsidiary colleges and maybe a private college here or there, but there's only one LSU. There's no competitor at that stage. That's actually unique, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there's no other school. I mean, no other school in the SEC that has that advantage. I mean, Florida's got Florida State, Miami. I mean, Georgia and Georgia Tech's the closest because Georgia Tech has fallen off, but it's still a major college with a lot of resources. Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Auburn, Alabama, you just don't have that. So they're able to kind of monopolize the talent, and we all know the talent level. You know, I did a panel session. You would have found it interesting at the book festival in New Orleans a week ago on sports in the South. My good friend James Carville was on the panel. We just had to wind him up, Ricky, and let him go. But the other panelist, who I'm sure you're familiar with, was Rick Cleveland, the longtime sports columnist from the Clarion Ledger. Now he's at Mississippi Today. Yeah. And he's got a terrific book out, Mississippi Football. And we talked a lot in the session about the two leading states for producing NFL talent in all of the United States are Mississippi and Louisiana per capita. And that says something, doesn't it? I mean, like, these two states, it's unbelievable their heritage and their history with producing NFL quality athletes. And Rick was great on that. Talked a lot about it. So we see, I mean, we're very blessed, I think, to have the powerful college programs we have here. And they're all supplied by a lot of local products. So I think it's very unique in Louisiana and Mississippi that we're able to kind of have these. And it's changing with the changing landscape in college sports and the transfer portal and NIL. I'm worried where it's going, Ricky, and we can talk about that. But I think in Louisiana, Mississippi, we're unique in that a lot of Mississippi kids stay home and a lot of Louisiana kids stay home to go to school.
Hey, incidentally, Rick Cleveland's book has been extremely well received. And
that's great.
He's been doing the book tour. Neil White, who is actually from Gulfport, grew up in the same neighborhood as Neil, who lives in Oxford now. He owns a company called Nautilus Publishing Company, and they're the ones who published that book.
It's a great book. I mean, so well done, Ricky. I mean, it's so easy to look through. It's so well laid out. It's first class. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's it. I mean, Neil does really, really good work. He actually, published a book that I care a lot. He's published many books, but Steve Azar, my friend, the musical artist from Greenville, who's also the music and cultural ambassador for the state of Mississippi, wrote the state song for Mississippi called One Mississippi. And he and a really, really good illustrator took the words of One Mississippi and made a children's book out of it. It's called One Mississippi, and it's selling so wonderfully. I saw it actually recently at a bookstore here in Gulfport. And Neil also published that as well. They do really good work up at Nautilus. You should keep that in mind in kind of future possibilities that you might be involved in. But anyway, you know, back to the work. How did Jaden Daniels do?
You know, look, I don't think he needed to do a whole lot. I mean, his top five status, I think, is established for the most part. I didn't think he had the best day throwing the ball, and he even said so afterwards. He missed some throws he normally hit. But, I mean, the hay's in the barn. Brian Kelly said that afterward. I mean, he's been poured over with a fine-tooth comb by these NFL evaluators. And he's really one of the incredible stories, Ricky. I mean, I was talking to our college reporters yesterday while we were watching the workouts. I can distinctly remember I covered his first game here when he played for LSU. They played Florida State in the Superdome 2 years ago and lost that game, fell behind early and had a furious rally and came up short. And I just remember the reaction after that game of fans who, you know, fans have such great expectations sometimes. And there were a lot of people questioning Jaden Daniels. And my column that night was basically saying, give this kid some time, have some patience. He's walking into a brand new situation here. He transferred in, and Florida State is a very good team. You know, most teams open up with a cupcake, and they're playing Florida State and you know, with NFL draft picks all over the defense. And sure enough, look at how he improved in 2 years to win the Heisman Trophy, to go from where he was that first game to winning the Heisman and now being a top five draft pick. I don't know if I've seen a player improve that much in such a short period of time.
Well, I like the way you said the hay's in the barn. Certainly, when you think about it from an evaluation point of view, and you've helped us understand better about all this, this is kind of where we are as you know, the NFL, where it is. I can't help but think about Moneyball and how data is driving so much. I mean, I know that there are other aspects. You know, they go with gut. They look at character. They look at leadership abilities. They look at decision-making, all those. But it's extremely data-driven. And this one picture you posted shows all these scouts, I think, in the center of the field, and they're, every one of them's got, you know, some kind of electronic device or note-taking in there. They're all – it's a really powerful picture because it shows – how incredibly engaged that whole group is, man. I mean, the NFL, the level of intensity and data-driven decisions that they're making today, will never look back again. It will continue to get even more intense as we go forward. They are looking for the edge in ways they never looked for it before. It's a pretty incredible process, isn't it?
Well, and I think a lot of it is you can track it back to how much money is involved, right? I mean, this is a very expensive decision when you talk about drafting a player in the first round, millions, multi-millions of dollars. And we see every year, Ricky, how inexact a science it is. I mean, half the players drafted in the first round don't pan out. So everyone's trying to be as efficient and cost efficient as possible and with these picks, and it's difficult. And yes, data is a big part of it, but I also think, you know, my column on Michael Pratt from Tulane was another side of it. You know, a lot of scouts there, decision makers, not just watching the physical traits of a player like Michael Pratt throwing the deep ball or throwing the, you know, with accuracy on a timing route, but they're also watching how he interacts with his teammates, how they interact with him. You know, these intangible traits, the qualities and characteristics of when you bring a player into a building, if you're going to invest millions of dollars in a player, you've got to make sure they're going to be the right fit, not just physically, but also, you know, mentally and have strong character. So I think those things sometimes get lost on these pro days. NFL general managers and personnel directors are watching everything. And Rick, yeah, I mean, Sean Payton talked about this the other day. He said he remembered going to a workout years ago. He didn't name the player, but he said they noticed that the quarterback was off throwing to one side by himself. All the receivers were throwing to each other, or with each other. He said that was a red flag.
Hey, it will be very interesting, actually, to watch Sean Payton. We'll actually chat a little bit about that when we come back on the other side. But Michael Pratt, I got a couple of observations to make about him, and we'll talk about the receivers at LSU, and we'll just, you know, we got some Pelican stuff to talk about as well. But when we come back on the other side, we'll continue our conversation with Jeff Duncan.
Reminding you why we all love living in this great state of Mississippi. It's the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hey, before we get back to the really fascinating conversation about quarterbacks and LSU and Tulane and what Sean Payton is going to do, I did mention, and I need to circle back just in case somebody wonders what I was referring to, but the Washington football team fan page actually called Jeff out. So, tell us about it, Jeff.
Yeah, well, I had a brain fart. Can I say that on the air? Yeah,
yes,
I
mean, you may.
It happens. Referred to the Washington football team by their original nickname, and you make any slip on social media these days, you're going to hear about it. What was funny about it was, you know, I tweeted out early in the day because, you know, we were there for 4 or 5 hours yesterday and then went back to doing my job and interacting and working sources and things like that. And then, you know, 2 hours later, checked my phone and saw once again, another controversy. So It was funny. I think it was actual football team that called me out. Their main account, but it was funny.
Well, you weren't the only one, incidentally. So that was the good news.
John, as a matter of fact, the information came from LSU when they sent it. And I just copied and pasted it and wasn't thinking. I was. It's a typical brain lapse.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You just posted my bad, and moved on because you got other things to focus on. That's for sure. But hey, I was going to mention one thing about Michael Pratt. Of course, we watched him. We get a lot of good coverage of Tulane here in coastal Mississippi, and in watching Michael Pratt play, man, he seems like such a great leader. And the thing that hits me about him is that picture that you posted showing that great smile he's got. And it reminds me of something. I was working for Knight Ridder, and I was working on a major plan, a strategic plan for the company. And one of the guys that was involved in the plan was a really, really smart guy, really was. And he was a leader and so on, but he never smiled. But it was interesting. He had a great smile. He just didn't use it. And one of the vice presidents at Knight Ridder said to me, he said, well, how's such and such doing? I said, well, you know, he's doing a good job, I guess. I mean, his analysis is as smart as anything I've ever seen before. But he comes across as being kind of a curmudgeon. But when he smiles, he's got a great smile. I mean, this guy, people are drawn to him. And he said, you know what? I need to give him that feedback. You got a great smile. Use it. But when you have to tell someone to do that, it either natural or it's not. With someone like Michael Pratt, it's natural, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the column spoke to the intangible traits. I think if you read the column, you can understand, like, his teammate Darius Monroe thinks the world of him, obviously referred to him as a great human being, and his quarterback's coach, just everyone around him in his orbit speaks so highly of him. And look, you got to be able to play. I mean, this isn't a game of choir boys. You got to be able to execute on the field, but that's a huge trait for a quarterback. It's what a lot of NFL decision makers want to see. Can you lift others? I mean, I saw it at the highest degree with Drew Brees. The level that he raised everyone else's standards in the building, that's, you know, infectious. And Drew Brees took a receiving core that had Marcus Colston, a seventh-round draft pick, Lance Moore, undrafted free agent, you know, guys that never were highly thought of coming into the NFL, and they won Super Bowls and broke all kinds of records. That's what a great, truly great quarterback and leader can do. And I think Michael Pratt's done that at every level. You know, one of the things that's interesting about his background, I didn't get into it in the column, but I've written about it before. I mean, he was homeschooled all the way up to his freshman year of high school. So he wasn't highly recruited because he didn't have a lot of videotape on him. But he started out at a small school before his senior year. He was very happy at the school, but he transferred to a bigger school in the Fort Lauderdale area because he wanted to challenge himself and show that he could do it on a higher level. And he succeeded there and immediately became the starter and led that team to a great season. And he did the same thing at Tulane. So to me, that's a pattern I'm seeing, a guy that can come into different situations and lift others and have great success. And that's why I believe he'll do the same thing at this next level.
So you think he's got a nice future, basically what you say.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, where his ceiling is or where his floor is. That remains to be seen. But I'll be shocked if he's not at least in the NFL for a decade at some level, whether it's a backup, whether he becomes a starter. I'll just be surprised. He's got all the intangibles and the tangibles. I mean, he won on the field. I mean, it's not coincidence, Ricky. They won 21 of 24 games he started. I mean, at Tulane, they'd never had that success before he got there. And I know Willie Fritz, and they built the program. There's a lot of reasons. But I think the biggest reason was that quarterback.
So if you look at Sean Payton, it's been fun watching Sean Payton. And incidentally, I just wanted to make the point, coming back to what you were saying before we went to break about all these intangibles. You know, I think people, it still kind of remains to be seen, but I think there's already some good body of evidence. When you think about the decisions last year that Houston had to make and that Carolina had to make, when you just look at data, it doesn't necessarily tell the story, does it?
No, that's what I mean. It's such an inexact science. I mean, somebody pointed out the other day on social media about the draft class that Justin Fields was in. That was just a few years ago, and all those guys are already on other teams now that were drafted in the first round. So it just shows you how difficult it is especially at the quarterback position. There's so many factors that go into it. You see a guy like Kirk Cousins who played in the league for 5 years before really becoming successful. And now he just signed a huge contract. Took him a while to find his bearings, and he developed over time. And I think that's true of most quarterbacks. Very few of them come in to this league and have the success like C.J. Stroud did last year.
I still come back to that quarterback series where, I mean, the contrast between him and other players, where other players may be going to an offsite training site and getting their body ready for the next week. He's taking Tuesdays off and doing his getting his brain right. It's just Kirk Cousins is just got a different approach. I'm sure that all of them got a different approach, but most of them, it's very physical approach. In his mind, it's a lot. There's a lot of mental preparation, and people have to be kind of used to that. But it really reflects on the field, and the Saints are going to have their hands full with that guy, aren't they?
Yeah, I think the Falcons now, we're seeing it reflected now in the early Las Vegas odds. Atlanta is by far the favorite now projected. I think they're over under win totals, 10.5 wins. They were a quarterback away, Ricky, and they knew they had to do it. Terry Fontenot, the former Saints director of pro personnel, is now running the operation over there. And they tried to make it work with Arthur Smith and DeRidder, and it just didn't work. So they've got to get it done now. Arthur Blank, I think, is in his early 80s. He's invested a lot in the stadium over there, a lot in the front office, a lot in the roster. He wants to win, and they really were, in my opinion, a quarterback away from being the best team in the division. It's a quarterback-driven league, and I think they went from having the worst quarterback in the division, no doubt, to now being the best situation. So I think they're the deserving favorites.
Well, listen, just because you're an observer of the situation, just in general, the NFL situation in general, and not just because you wrote the book about Peyton, but you can't help but look over there and see what he's doing and wonder what's his next move going to be, because he's all in on getting a new quarterback now, and he knows he's got to figure out who his next Drew Brees is going to be. And, of course, there's stuff being written, different analysts saying different things. J.J. McCarthy's in the conversation. But he's going to do something big in this draft, isn't he?
Yeah, I'll be surprised if he doesn't. That's just how he's wired. Now, can he make it happen? I think the key for them is going to be, does he have a couple of options? Because J.J. McCarthy's a guy who's been linked to the Broncos a lot, but he's being linked to a lot of teams. I mean, there's a lot of reports out there now. Ricky's thinking he might go number two in the whole draft to the Washington Commanders. So he may not have the option of getting J.J. McCarthy, but does he have someone else in mind from the mix? Because I think they're down in the around number 12 or so in the first round. Yeah. So to get up in that top five.
I think 13 is what it last I read.
Okay, yeah. 13, yeah. So to get up in the top five is going to take a lot. I remember a few years ago when the Saints were down around 11 and they tried to get up, and it was very difficult for them to do. It takes a lot of draft capital. But knowing the way he's wired and knowing he understands the quarterback position, how important it is, they've got, you know, Jarrett Stidham there. He's a capable guy. He's not a frontline guy. I don't think they want to be married to Jarrett Stidham, but they're okay with him. But I think they want to definitely upgrade that position. And there's a lot of pressure on Sean Payton. I mean, just jettison Russell Wilson, who the organization invested hundreds of millions of dollars in. He's got to get this situation right. He knows that. And that's why everyone I've talked to around him this offseason said he is all business. I mean, I heard at the Indy Combine in Indy, you know, that's almost like a convention for the NFL. If you're up there, guys are out 3, 4 a.m. partying, socializing, and then they get up the next morning, go to the field, and they've got their coffee trying to nurse their hangovers. Art Payton was doing none of that. I mean, he was all business because he understands how important this decision is.
He's all in. He knows what he wants to see. I haven't literally read everything, but I have followed it very closely. And my sense is he gave Russell Wilson a chance. You know, he tried. I don't think he was thinking it was a doomed deal to going in. I think he wanted to evaluate it himself. And And it just didn't work out, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I don't think, I think the way Sean would say it is neither one of them is probably right for each other. It's not necessarily Russell's fault.
Yeah.
It's just that Sean's system, he's not the right quarterback for it.
We're definitely going to see that. Hey, when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Jeff Duncan. We'll see you after this break.
Now, back to more of the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. It's Friday on the show, and we actually have Jeff Duncan for the entire show from NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. But it's, you know what's interesting to watch, and you've tweeted about this. It's curious to see what players you might see during the offseason. You're seeing players at the training facility now, aren't you?
Yeah, because a lot of guys, especially guys that are rehabbing injuries, offseason surgeries, they're pretty much out at the Saints facility using their workout complex and being monitored by the training staff. So you see guys, Nick Saldivari, the rookie last year, offensive lineman, was out there. Foster Moreau, the tight end, was on the exercise bike. And it's funny because the Saints facility, Ricky, is under construction. As you know, they're putting in a new cafeteria. They're putting in a new weight room. So it's a construction site. So all the weight equipment and everything's out of the weight room. It's out on the floor of the indoor training facility, so there was nowhere for any player to hide. They had to be out there and working out while Michael Pratt was going through his throwing session. You had Saints players riding exercise bikes, so it was kind of everyone was in the same room. But I'm sure you saw the news about Ryan Ramczyk that came out from NFL owners meetings. That's a serious concern for the New Orleans Saints. I mean, the fact that he's not progressing, this has been an ongoing issue for Ryan Ramczyk for years. 2 years ago, I had someone in the building tell me they didn't know if he'd ever play again. That was 2 years ago. He's got a chronic degenerative knee condition that really there's nothing that the medical team or the Saints medical staff can really do about it. It is what it is. And so for him to have, you know, kind of this lack of progress and to hear Dennis Allen say he's not sure if he'll be ready for the start of the season, to me, that's very discouraging. And I think the best thing that's happened for the Saints is they know about it and they can try to address it in the upcoming draft.
Well, you talked about this, and we as Saints fans got super spoiled, but we had 2 decades of some of the best offensive line play in the entire NFL. I mean, we may never see that again.
Right. And they did a great job of addressing that through the draft and also through free agency. The fact that we had these great tackle runs. I mean, I remember Jamal Brown, he was drafted in the Jim Haslett, Randy Mueller era. He was an All-Pro, and then he was immediately replaced, by Jermon Bushrod, who went to the Pro Bowl at left tackle, and then he was replaced by Teron Armstead, who went to the Pro Bowl at left tackle. So you just don't have that at a premium position. Pro Bowler, Pro Bowler, Pro Bowler, just doesn't happen. Most teams are looking for that. And so the Saints have done a good job of identifying talent and developing talent at those bookend positions. And Ryan Ramczyk was a big part of that. He replaced Zach Strief, who had such a great run there, who replaced John Stinchcomb, who was a Pro Bowler himself. So they've had stability there too, durability, guys that were at that position for 5-10 years. You didn't have to worry about it. Now, I think the Saints have really question marks at both tackle positions and not a lot of assets with the salary cap issues they have really available to address it.
Well, it feels frustrating because you've always said that whether we win or lose is going to be in the trenches, whether it be on the defensive side of the ball, the offensive side of the ball. And we, for so long, had gotten, again, spoiled with such great offensive line play. I mean, you said 12 sacks in a season. Think about that, man. That's like almost impossible to comprehend.
Yeah, that was a club record when Drew Brees was there. And I think at the time was an NFL record. I'm not sure if it still is. Less than one a game. You see some teams get sacked 8-10 times in one game. Saints had 12 in a whole year. And look, that's what magnifies the problems they are having right now with Trevor Penning, because they thought they had left tackle addressed. And when you miss at a player that high, at a premium position, it has a domino effect on the rest of your roster. So I'm not ready to give up on Trevor Penning. He's got ability. There's a reason he was drafted in the first round. The Saints have to get that out of him. And I know they have a plan for him this offseason. I think they're going to send him off to some offensive line specialist training camps to try and get his fundamentals in order. It's really more fundamentals and basics. It's not the physical talent. The guy's 6'6", 6'7", and has really very little body fat. So he's physically able to dominate. It's all the other little things that he's got to get right. So I'm not ready to give up on him, but they can't rely on him right now.
Yeah.
And there's a new offensive line coach, a new offensive staff there. So maybe a fresh set of eyes and a fresh set of ways, a way of doing things will lead to better production from him.
Hey, listen, the Pelicans real quick in the last couple minutes we have. The Pelicans, I watched a game in Miami. Zion only had four points. Actually, I think the lowest he's ever scored in a game. But the other team, the other members of the team played so well, and they won that game. And, you know, they were beginning to build some momentum. Then they got a key injury. But, you know, just when you think they might be getting there, and then they start playing these teams they're supposed to beat and can't put it together. What do you think?
Well, they've had a disturbing trend of not being able to close out close games and not executing down the stretch. That Oklahoma City Thunder game was a perfect example. They were down 20 at one point. They rallied, got a five-point lead, and then got outscored 12-0 down the stretch. They've got to figure that part out, Ricky, or it'll be a short postseason for them.
Yeah, I actually would. Yeah, I'm not a big NBA fan, but you know, when the Pelicans are playing well, they're really fun to watch because they're stingy on defense. They've got some shooters now. They're spreading the ball around. And when Zion's on his game, you can't stop the dude. So fun team to watch. That's why I enjoy watching them. Hey, listen, Jeff, have a great Easter. Have a great weekend, my friend.
You too, Ricky. We'll talk next week, buddy.
You bet. It's been a pleasure. Y'all have a great weekend. God bless everybody. And we will see you on Monday.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.